Ervin Daf Ayin Vav. We are on Ayin Hey Amud Beis. We're going to be starting at the two dots with the words Imhayu Shel Yechidim. In the Mishnah Ayin Hey Amud Aleph, we were introduced to the topic of Drisus Haregel. Drisus Haregel already has come up a number of times in the Masechta, but the Mishnah in yesterday's Daf dealt with the issue straight on. The Mishnah taught us that when I have Drisus Haregel, when I have traffic that necessarily has to go through another Chatzir, so that Drisus Haregel, that traffic becomes now de facto residences of this Chatzir, and therefore could possibly create an Isser. The Mishnah presented three opinions on this matter. We're going to go from one extreme to the other extreme, and then we're going to see the middle position. One extreme is that Drisus Haregel is a non-factor whatsoever. The Gemara noted at the conclusion of the discussion in yesterday's Daf that that is a shita that's found in our Mishnah, that Drisus Haregel is just simply a non-factor whatsoever, and the only people that you need to be concerned about are only the people that are actually residing in this Chatzir, and not the traffic that goes through the Chatzir. On the other hand, on the other extreme, you have the shita of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that Drisus Haregel is always going to create an Isser. And it doesn't matter whether the Drisus Haregel is coming from a courtyard which is itself Asur, or whether it's coming from a courtyard which itself is Mutter, Lefi Shitas Rabbi Akiva, it's always going to create an Isser. And then there's the middle sheet, the sheet of the Chachamim, and that is to say that the Drisus Haregel is only going to be a problem if it's coming from a Makom Isser. If, on the other hand, the Drisus Haregel is coming from a Makom Heter, so then therefore it doesn't create a problem whatsoever. So, for example, if I have a interior Chatzer, and the people in the interior Chatzer necessarily have to walk through the exterior Chatzer in order to get out to the street, so if the interior Chatzer is already Mu'urav, if an Erev was made for it, or if the interior chatzar is only made up of one person, so then, according to this middle sheet of the Chachamim, there's no problem. Because the Drisus Haregel is coming from a makom hamutter, and therefore doesn't create Isser. If, on the other hand, the interior chatzar is made up of a group of people, which is eno mu'urav, so under those circumstances, now the Drisus Haregel is a Drisus Haregel ha'asur, and therefore it will be osir. It will therefore prohibit the exterior chatzar because we're now treating those people that are going through as if they are residences of this chatzar, and therefore it'll create isser for the exterior chatzar. That is, in short summary, a summary of the Mishnah on Ayin Hamad Aleph. The end of the Mishnah dealt with a scenario in which I had the interior and exterior chatzar, each one occupied by only one person, so therefore there's no problem. Good. On that, now the Gemara is going to make a comment. The comment starts with a statement made by Rav Yosef. Amar Rav Yosef. Tini Rebbe Hayugimel Asurim. So Rav Yosef says in B'Shem Rebbe, meaning Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, that if there are three people, it's going to be Asur. Meaning, if you have between the two Chatzeros a total of three people, there's going to be Isur. Now, if there are two people in the interior and they didn't make an Erev, you certainly understand why there's an Isur, because that is a Regel Ha'oseris. If, on the other hand, if the two people are in the exterior, so then obviously it's challenging to understand, because that means there's only one person in the interior. One person in the interior is not restricted. And if he's not restricted, so then he should not be able to create restriction for the exterior. So that's difficult to understand. So in a moment, we're about to explain that the basis of this is really it's a gzeira. In other words, once we have more than one person per chatzir, and even though the distribution right now currently as constructed is fine, i.e. it's one in the interior and two in the exterior, but since now we are getting comfortable with the idea that when there's more than one person per chatzir, it's going to be fine, so then the Chachamim are concerned that it's always going to be fine. Now this is all as per the Shita of Rav Yosef, as he has a tradition, B'Shem Rav Yehuda. Now see, the Gemara makes over here a small correction. Amalu Rabbi lo tatsisu le Rabbi says, don't listen. An amrisa nihale mishma de Rav Adar Ba'ava amrisa nihale. I have it as a tradition that goes back to Rav Adar Ba'ava, and that is ho v'ani korei bahem rabim b'chitzona. Because this could lead to a case of rabim b'chitzona, where you have a number of people in the outer courtyard. So the just correction in terms of how the statement was originally stated. In other words, it wasn't Tani Rebbe, that's the way Rav Yosef presented it, but rather Rabim Bechitzona. What Rav Yosef did is he confused the word Rebbe with Rabim, which parenthetically, as a side note, would seem to indicate that the correct way to pronounce Rebbe is not Rebbe the way we say it, the way I say it, but rather the correct way to say it would be Rabbi, and that's how you can understand a confusion that occurs between the word Rabbi and Rabim. But regardless, anyway, that is according to According to Rav Bibi, that's the correct, the actual correct Masorah of the statement. So I'm Rav Yosef. When Rav Yosef says this, when he hears this, he says, "Married Avraham, oh my God, Rabim, Rabbi, Echlifli." He recognizes his mistake. He confused the word Rabim with Rabbi. Anyway, but what comes out over here is that as far as the correction is concerned, it doesn't really change the intent of the statement. Meaning, as far as the basic point of the statement is concerned, it comes out to be the same thing, which is that even though, despite the fact that we have three people, one in the interior, two in the exterior, and that one in the interior is obviously not creating Isser, nevertheless, even in that case, it's going to create Isser because of a general Gzera D'Rabbanan, as we already laid out. Shmuel Amar Shmuel, on the other hand, says, no, Lola Mutara, Sach Yushnaim Bepinimis, Vecha Bechitzona. Shmuel says, no, if I have one in the interior and two in the exterior, so it's going to be fine. The only time there's going to be Isser is I have two in the interior, because two in the interior now creates Isser, meaning, assuming, of course, that no error was made between those people in the interior. So it creates Isser, and since it creates Isser, so therefore that is a regal Haoseris, which will Aser in the outer Chatzar as well. I'm Rabbi Elazar. Sorry, before we get to Rabbi Elazar. Good. So what we have now laid out in front of us is a Machlokes HaAmarayim in terms of whether or not we're going to make a Gzera D'Rabbanan. Now, yes, it does certainly sound like the issue over here is making a Gzera D'Rabbanan and an already existing institution D'Rabbanan, i.e. Eir Chatziris already is D'Rabbanan to begin with. And over here, the idea, the first opinion, is that we're going to make a Gzera D'Rabbanan on top of it. So yes, it's a little bit strange, it's a little bit unusual, but okay. Anyway, that is but we have a Machlokas. And the way the Machlokas now spells out is that according to the first opinion, attributed to Rav Yosef, corrected, amended a little bit, but the basic idea is that once I have the inner and outer chatzer, and once I have more than one person per chatzer, even if the construction is one in the interior and two in the exterior, so under those circumstances, unless they make an Eruv, it's going to be Aser. The Drisas Arego will be Oser. And Shmuel, on the other hand, says no. Shmuel says that the only time that there is a concern is when the multitude of owners, meaning when the two owners are on the interior. And the reason why, as we already explained, is because when you have the two owners in the interior and they didn't make an Eruv, therefore it's a Drisas Arego HaOser, and therefore it creates Oser. Amar Rebbe Elazar. On this, the Gemara adds the following point, and that is Venachri Hare Hu Kirabim. So as far as a non-Jew is concerned, we're going to be treating a non-Jew like Rabin, as if to say that there is more than one in the interior chatzar. Now the Gemara says, now I don't understand. Maishna Yisrael Dolo Aser. So in moments earlier we said that if it was a Jew in the interior chatzar, so there's not going to be Iser. Demandi Yada Yada Mandalo Yada Savar Iruve Irev. So because either the people generally know that there's one person in the interior, and that doesn't create Isser, or even if people think that there's more than one person in the interior, but they're just going to simply say, yeah, but they made an Eruv, and that's why everything's fine. Nachri Nami, Amrina Diyad Yada. And if it's a non-Jew that's in the interior, well, if it's one non-Jew in the interior, then people will know. And Delo Yad, then if people don't know, meaning people will just assume that there's a non-Jew in the interior together with Jews in the interior, Savar Igure Igar. So they're just going to safely assume that, okay, but I guess they conformed and they did what they were supposed to do. Meaning if you have a chatzer that is owned by non-Jews and Jew, by one non-Jew and many Jews, or regardless of how many non-Jews are there, so you simply rent out the rights. And won't people assume that that's what happened in the interior? So the Gemara's response is, Nachri, Isa de Oger, mi pai pai. So the Gemara says, no, because if the non-Jew was in fact renting out a space, so he'd be very talkative about it. People would know because the general assumption is that he broadcasts this information to the populace at large. Anyway, comes out now that according to Rav Elazar, not only is this Gzera going to extend if there is a Jew in the interior, but even if it's a non-Jew in the interior as well. So the Chachamim goes there and will also ban the Drisus Aregel from the interior under those circumstances as well. Okay. I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rav Shmuel. The Gemara now is going to continue. We're going to move now in topics as we are getting to the end here of the sixth parak of the Masechta. And we are going to be discussing now the idea of a base sha'ar. Just as a quick introduction, the basic idea is as follows. Which homes around a chatzar need to contribute? So that is the residential homes. And when you're talking about primary residential homes, so those are the homes that need to contribute to the Eruv. If I were to have a house, but it's not a primary residential home, so then it does not need to contribute. So, for example, now in these discussions, we're going to be talking about a guardhouse. A guardhouse is something which is not considered primary residence, and so therefore it does not need to contribute to the Eruv. And at the very same time, if it doesn't need to contribute to the Eruv, so therefore it does not create restriction as well. So the Gemara here now discusses exactly this scenario in an interesting setup. I'm Rav Yehuda Mishmol, Yudbatim Zu Lifnim Mizeh. So let's say I have 10 houses, one interior to the next. And now over here, if you have a picture of this, it would be extraordinarily helpful to see this visually in order to understand and appreciate exactly what we're talking about. But if I could try to describe it, we have a chatzer. A chatzer is abutted by a number of houses, and it's also abutted by a house that has many other houses connected to it, but not to the chatzer itself. In fact, you have a row of 10 houses in which only one of the houses abuts to this particular chatzer, in addition to the other houses that abut to the same chatzer. And now the question becomes the following: of those 10 houses, where only one of them actually abuts, which one of them actually needs to make a contribution to the Eruv? And interestingly enough, the answer is going to be not the house that actually abuts to the chatzer, but rather just the opposite. The most interior of the houses need to contribute to the Eruv. Why should that be? So as we're going to see in just a moment, but the idea here is that it is only the most interior home. Let's give all these houses numbers so that we can hopefully be a little bit clearer in terms of which house we're talking about. If the house that abuts to the chatzer is, let's say, house number one, so then the most interior house that we're going to call now house number 10. So under those circumstances now, it is only house number 10 that needs to contribute to the Eruv, and the other nine houses do not need to contribute to the Eruv. And let's see the Gemara inside. The Gemara is going to explain this. Actually, the Gemara is going to not be too detailed about it, but let's see the Gemara inside. So Amar Rav Yehuda Mishmol Yudbatim Zu Lifnim Mizeh. So Panimi knows and I say Ruva V'dayo. So only the most interior house has to contribute to the Eruv, meaning house number 10. And Rav Yochanan Amar Afilu Chitzon. Now Rav Yochanan says even the exterior house. At this point in time, we think it means house number one, but it doesn't mean house number one. So Chitzon Beisharhu. The Gemara says, what are you talking about? The most exterior house is a guardhouse. So Chitzon Shel Panimi. So the Gemara says, no, what he meant was the exterior to the interior. Or to put in other terms, house number nine. So basically, the machlokus over here between Shmuel and Rav Yochanan is that only the most interior house has to contribute to the Eruv. According to Shmuel, it's only going to be house number 10. And according to Rav Yochanan, it's going to be house number 9 and house number 10. Now, the other houses don't have to contribute. Now, before we get to the Ma'akim Iflagi, the Gemara is going to explain the machlokus between Shmuel and Rav Yochanan, but the basic idea over here is as follows. These other houses, because it is understood that in order to exit, to leave house number 10, right, the most interior house, it by definition is going to have to be able to walk through houses numbers 9 through 1. So the way to view houses numbers 9 through 1 is basically they are gatehouses, they're guardhouses for house number 10. As such, these houses don't need to contribute because they're not considered primary residences. That's the basic idea of the Gemara. Now, that explains Shmuel's position very well. What about Rav Yochanan? So as the Gemara is about to say, but we'll say it outside first, according to Rav Yochanan, 9 could also be viewed as primary residence. It's true that 9 is the gatekeeper, so to say, for house number 10, but if all you have is just one house gatekeeping for another house, so Rav Yochanan says you don't really describe that as a gatehouse. That's the Gemara's explanation. So Mamakim Mifligi Marsavar Beishar Diachishme Beishar Maisavar Loshme Beishar. So the Gemara says exactly what we just said, that the machlokes between Shmuel and Rav Yochanan is that if you have a guardhouse, but it's only there to guard one other house. So Shmuel would still call that a guardhouse, and Rav Yochanan would say, no, you cannot describe that as a guardhouse. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rava Baravua, Amar Rav. So the Gemara now, in light of what we just learned together, this idea of a guardhouse and the guardhouse not considered a primary residence, and therefore there is no requirement to contribute to the Eruv. So the Gemara now deals with a scenario which is also going to be addressing this very question. I have two chatzeros and three houses that are between them. Beis chatzeros v'gam abatim b'neim zeba derech zev v'nosin eruvo b'zev v'zeba derech zev v'nosin eruvo b'zev. I'm just going to read the Gemara first, and then we'll explain afterwards. Zenasa beishar lezev v'zenasa beishar lezev im sari havle bai shemenichem bo eruv v'im sarach litein es hapas. So the way the Gemara presents it, again, if you're seeing a picture of this right now in front of you, it would be extraordinarily helpful. But the basic idea is that these three houses stand between two chatzeros. And to these two chatzeros, there are also other houses that are abutting them. It's not just these houses that are abutting the chatzer. There are other houses as well. Now, the idea over here is as follows. that if we could just take a look at these three houses, let's call them A, B, and C. B being right in the middle, A being abutting one chatzer, and C abutting the other chatzer. And what they would like to do is they would like to make one unified Eruv. And where would they like to put that Eruv? They'd like to put that Eruv in the central house, in the B house. So under those circumstances, so what the Mishnah is telling us is as follows. It's not a Mishnah, sorry. It's a Rav Nachman. Is that under these circumstances, so you could do that. In fact, what you could do is that everybody of chatzer number one, okay, let's say chatzer number one abuts the A house, and chatzer number two abuts the C house. Okay, if we're all kind of looking at the same picture together, visually. And chatzer number one, so all the other residents, all the other members of chatzer number one are going to then send their Eruv and place it. Now, where are they going to place it? So they're not going to be placing it in the A house because the A house is a garden house to B. So the A house actually does not need to contribute to the Eruv because of its status of it being a Beishar. So therefore, what they can do now is they could just simply skip over the A house. In fact, the A house doesn't even have to contribute to the Eruv because it is a garden house. And what they're going to do is they're going to put it into the central house, into the B house. And the same thing is going to be true in the other chatzer. Members of the other chatzer are now going to also all make contributions of bread. And now the C house doesn't need to contribute because it too is considered Beishar. And so therefore the only place where they are going to contribute and send it to is going to be also in the B house as well. And then just one other point that we read, and now I'm explaining, is that the B house, the central house itself, does not have to make an actual contribution to the Eruv. Why? Because even though the B house is considered primary residence, but nevertheless, it is going to be the host of the Eruv. And a point already we made a number of times, and that is that the host of an Eruv itself doesn't actually have to contribute to the Eruv. As we already expressed, this takes us all the way back to Daf Mem Tes. If you are a host house, so therefore you already have the Makom Dira, and so therefore the whole idea of an Eruv is to create one central Makom Dira. So if you're hosting, you are providing the Makom Dira, and so therefore you don't actually have to contribute the bread itself. Okay? That is the idea over here of this halacha of Rav Nachman. Now the Gemara is going to try to advance this and move it ahead one step further. Badik lehu rachva l'rabbanan. The following question was posed from Rachva to the Chachamim. Beis chatzeros ubeis batim b'neihem. So let's say I have two courtyards. This case is going to be somewhat similar to the previous case, but a couple of notable points. One is that between these two chatzeros, they're not three houses, but it's only two houses. Again, each of these chatzeros also have other houses that are abutting these chatzeros as well. Now, unlike the previous case where we wanted to make one central Eruv for the two chatzeros over here, what they would actually like to do is they would like to make two separate Eruvim for these two chatzeros. Now, what's the problem? Zeba derech zeh v'nosen Eruv v'zeh, zeba derech zeh v'nosen Eruv v'zeh, kanu Eruv olam. The question becomes the following. Let's again describe our chatzeros as one and two. Let's say I'm chatzer one. Now the house of these two houses that abut chatzer number one, let's call it now house A. So house A, so that really is a guard house to house B. So can they do the following? Can the members of chatzer number one take their Eruv, which is collected bread from everybody within the chatzer, and now they can't put it in the A house because the A house is a Beishar, and not only is the Beishar not able to make a contribution to the Eruv, it cannot be the home to the Eruv. So can they now move it past the A house and move it into the B house? The B house, from Chatzar 1's perspective, is considered a bona fide house. Now, if we go to the other Chatzar, what we're going to find is basically the mirror image, meaning that in Chatzar number 2, which abuts the B house, so the B house from their perspective is going to be a Beishar. And so therefore, for them, the actual house, the primary house, is going to be the A house, not the B house. Now, hopefully, if I'm explaining this well, you realize the conundrum that has just been created. Meaning, it's just a question of which chatzer we are looking from. From chatzer number one, A is the Beishar, and B is the actual primary residence. If I'm looking from chatzer number two, so B is the Beishar, and one is that primary residence. So, will halacha allow that kind of ambiguity? We're basically, depending on where you're starting from, so A could either be the Beishar or the primary residence, depending on where you're coming from. Will halacha allow that? That's the question. We're back in the Gemara, reading inside. Mi mashve lehu legabi dahai bias, o legabi dahai Beishar. O legabi dahai bias, Beisharut Lagabi de Habais. That's exactly the Gemara's question. Can we do that? Can Halacha afford and give us the opportunity to look at each house relative to where we're coming from, even though that's going to be giving two mutually exclusive definitions to each of those houses? So I'm Relay Shneim Lokanu, Eruv. So his answer, very quick and very authoritative, and he says, no, it doesn't work. Halacha does not permit us to do that. Halacha will only allow us to look at a house in one way. Either it's a Beishar or it's a Bais, but it cannot be both. So Manav Shachi Beishar Mashvile. I know it's in Ezeruva, but Beishar Chsadrum and Pesach and Eruv. Is Bais Mashvile Kamatato Labais Delom Ma'arivle. And he says, look, you got to choose. Either it's a Beishar, which cannot be the host of a Eruv, or it's the actual house itself. But it cannot be both. So the Gemara says, Umayshna midirava. So the Gemara says, okay, but we're going to go back now in some time and go over a halacha that we said some time ago. The case over here is talking about Erev Tchum. And what happened was is that one person is appointed the shliach by two separate individuals. Each of those individuals asked him to set up an Erev Tchum for the two of them. And what he did is he took the shtei seudos from the two people and he took that and he brought it to the makom Erev where he was going to set up an Erev Tchum. Le'echad Erev alav mibod yom u'le'echad Erev alav bin hashmashos. And then he did not set them up exactly at the same time. He set them up in the same place, but not exactly at the same time. One he set up before Bein HaShmashos, meaning while it was still day, while it was still Friday. And the other one he set up actually during the Bein HaShmashos. But that's not it. Zeh she'irev alav mibo yom nechal eruvo Bein HaShmashos. The one who he set up, the Erev Tchum that was set up before Bein HaShmashos, so it was actually consumed during Bein HaShmashos. The one that was set up during Bein HaShmashos, that one was consumed after it was Vadai Laila. Now, under these circumstances, now, can we say that both Erev Tchums work out? So the answer is going to be yes. Shneim Kanu Erev. The two Erevs work out. Now, what the Gemara is bothered by is that, effectively, what we just said you can't do by Erev Chatzeros, so it sounds like we're doing exactly that by Erev Tchum. Let's elaborate just a little bit. By Erev Tchum, basically what we're saying is as follows. In order for an Erev Tchum to be Kohen, it has to be around during the Bein HaShmashos period. We've said already numerous times when discussing the Erev Tchum that the time that it's Kohen is during Bein HaShmashos. So one was set up immediately before Bein HaShmashos and then consumed during Bein HaShmashos. The other one was set up, let's say, immediately at that point during Bein HaShmashos and then consumed at a later point in time. So which point of Bein HaShmashos is going to be Kohen? If we can actually point to a singular point within Bein HaShmashos during that interval of time when it's going to be Kona, so that means to say that only one of them should be Kona. And meanwhile, what we are saying in the case of the Erev Tchum is that, no, we're okay with the ambiguity. We don't know when during Bein HaShmashos the transition was made from day to night. And even though, despite the fact that we don't have the exact knowledge, the precise knowledge, but basically what we could say is that, look, each of those Erev Tchums that were set up did experience each one of them a little bit of Bein HaShmashos, albeit not the same Bein HaShmashos, but each one of them experienced a little Bein HaShmashos, so therefore the Erev is going to be Kona for the both of them. What the Gemara is saying is that, look, over there, we're totally fine with the ambiguity, so why over here are we not doing the same thing? Meaning these houses, these two houses, so from one Chatzar's perspective, one house is the Beis Sha'ar, and the next one over is the actual Bais. From the other Chatzar's perspective, just the opposite. But why aren't we comfortable with the ambiguity, much like we're comfortable with the ambiguity regarding the Erev Tchum? The Gemara says, I'll tell you, Hachi Hashta, they're not the same case, they're not comparable. And probably you already thought about the distinction, the Gemara spells it out. Hasam Safik Imama Safik Laila, Lo Minkara Milsa. When it comes to the Bein HaShmashos, so we know that there's an interval of time from when the day officially ends to when the night officially begins. So there is this in between time, this twilight time, which we described as Bein HaShmashos, which we already described numerous times. It is a time that is not distinguishable. It's lo minkara milsa. It is simply not recognizable. And so because it's not recognizable, so therefore, it's easy for us to look at that time, that period of time, and be ambivalent in terms of when precisely during that time we had one Erev Tchum set up, when we had the other one set up. So it's just simply a time of total ambivalence. On the other hand, of Alhachi, the Lagabe High Bias, Lagabe High Bias, Ilagabe the High Beishar, Lagabe the High Nami Beishar. But over here, we're looking at two definitive properties. And so, when we're looking at two definitive properties, so, and labeling the two definitive properties, so we have to just simply describe each of those properties as one or the other. Either each of the properties is a Beit Shar, or this particular property is a Beit Shar and the other one is an actual bias. But in other words, what we cannot do is we can't point to a house and describe it with any kind of ambiguity. Well, this house is a Beit Shar from this side, but it really a bias from the other side. You simply can't do that. On the other hand, Bein HaShemashos, you absolutely can do that, because the period of Bein HaShemashos, the interval of Bein HaShemashos, is really a period of time which exists in ambivalence. So the Gemara says the cases are not comparable, and as a result of that, it's true that when it comes to the Erev Tchum, we're comfortable with the ambivalence, but over here, by the case of Erev Chatzeres, we're simply uncomfortable with the ambivalence. Hajran al-Khadar, and that is the end of the sixth parak of Erevin. We have the schusa now of starting the seventh parak, and the ideas over here are going to be very similar to what we described previously, in that we're going to continue our discussion of Erev Chatzeros, and notably we're going to be dealing with one very basic halacha that's going to be coming up a lot in the beginning of the seventh parak of Erevin. The idea that when I have two Chatzeros that are contiguous to one another, and if there is simply no portal that allows me to get from one chatzah to another, and it's a wall that goes completely across, totally segregating the two chatzeros, so under those circumstances, so now each chatzah is going to make their own eruv, and there is no opportunity for the two chatzeros to make a joint eruv simply because there's no access to get from one chatzah to another chatzah. On the other hand, if there is no wall that exists between the two of them, so you can't call them two chatzeros. Obviously, now they are one chatzer. And so obviously there's no, even using the words joint Erev is a little bit strange because it's one chatzer. What we're going to be discussing is the sweet middle spot where there is a wall separating these two chatzeros, but at the same time there's also a portal and opening a doorway that allows one to go from one chatzer to another. So as we're going to be seeing numerous times throughout this, the beginning of the seventh parak, so under those circumstances there actually is an option. Option A is that each of the chatzeros can make their own independent Erev, or option B, because there is a Pesach connecting the two, so they have an opportunity to go ahead and to make a single, united Eruv between the two Chatzeros. With that stated, says a brief introduction, let's begin the first Mishnah. Chalon, Shebein Beis Chatzeros. So if I have a window that are between the two Chatzeros, Dalal Dalid, the window is an area of 4x4 Tfachim, Besoch Asara, and it's within 10 Tfachim of the floor, Ma'arvin Shnaim V'imratzu Ma'arvin Echad. So here you can now work with the option either of making two separate Erevin or to make one joint Erev. Palchos midalad al dalad, if the size of the window is less than 4x4 tfachim, oh, lemala miyud, or let's say the window is above 10 tfachim from the ground, marvin shnayim vein marvin echad. So then the wall is considered a complete wall, which only affords each of the chatzeros to make their own independent Erev, but not an opportunity to make a joint Erev. The Gemara immediately launches into number one. Is our Mishnah going like Rav Shimon Gamliel? Right now, the Gemara is thinking that the size of 4x4 Tfachim has something to do with the halakhas of Lavud. And as you recall, we went over this already a number of times early in the Masechta. Lavud means that when I have a gap within a certain space, so it's considered closed. What is that gap? So it's a machlokes between the Tanakama and Rav Shimon Gamliel. Tanakama says 3 Tfachim, Shimon Gamliel says 4 Tfachim. The Gemara right now thinks that this halacha of chalon is somehow connected to lavud. And if that's true, which the Gemara in a moment is going to reject that, so then it would make sense that the author of our Mishnah is Rav Shimon Gamliel. Damar kol pachos midal kol lavudami. That's Rav Shimon Gamliel says that anything less than 4 is lavud, which means that once it's 4, it is beyond the size of lavud, and therefore it's not considered closed. So the Gemara says, no, afilo tema karabana, nad kan lo pligi rabana la drav Shimon Gamliel, ela li inyan livu din, ava li inyan pescha, afilo rabanan modu, di ika dal adal chashiv ilo, lo chashiv. So the Gemara says, no, this is not a lavud halacha, this is a Pesach halacha. This is a question of what is considered a portal that allows access from one chatzir to another chatzir. And so the chachamim who say that lavud is anything less than 3 tfachim, they're more than comfortable over here saying that as far as a Pesach is concerned, the definition of a Pesach, it's got to be 4 tfachim and greater, even though lavud is less than 3 tfachim. Pachus midal v'chulip shita, kevin da amar dal ha'adal pesoch asara. Mimela ana yadana de pachus midal v'lamala miyud lo. So the Gemara is bothered by the following. If you look at the second half of our Mishnah, it is redundant. Now, I say redundant in that once you learn the first half of the Mishnah well, with the inferences made by the first half of the Mishnah, you pretty much have now, you can deduce, we can all deduce what's in the second half of the Mishnah. In the first half of the Mishnah, it says that the window has to be 4x4. A simple deduction would be anything less than 4x4, it's no good. Well, that's the second half of the Mishnah. The first half of the Mishnah says that the window has to be within 10 tefachim of the ground. A simple deduction would tell me that if it's above 10 tefachim from the ground, so it's no good. So, what the Gemara is bothered by is that the second half of the Mishnah are all the simple deductions that we could have deduced from the first half of the Mishnah, which means that the second half of the Mishnah is superfluous. So the Gemara says, "Hakamash malan time de kula lamala miyud, aval miksaso besoch yud ma'arvin shlaim v'imrasu ma'arvin echad." So the Gemara says, "No, because what we learn from the second half of the Mishnah is that when it comes to the window, it doesn't have to be in its entirety within 10 tefachim of the ground, as long as part of the window is within 10 tefachim of the ground, so that would be sufficient." Tanila ad tana rabbanan. The Gemara here quotes a brisa that reinforces exactly this point. Lamala miyud. Sorry, kulo lamala miyud. If the entire window is above 10 tefachim, umiksasa besoch asara, or some of it is within 10 tefachim, kulo besoch yud, umiksasa lamala miyud. Or the second part point of the brisa is that the vast majority of the window is within 10 tefachim. Some of it's above. So ma'arvin shleim v'imrasa ma'arvin echad. So that is considered a pesach connecting the two, meaning that if they want to make one unified erev, they can do so. Now the Gemara says that the way the brisa we just learned together is constructed seems to be that the brisa told us a huge chiddush and afterwards told us something which isn't a chiddush at all. Hasha kula lamala miyudim excessive besoch yud amart ma'arvin shleim v'imrasa ma'arvin echad kula besoch yudim excessive lamala miyud mibaye. So the Gemara says, look, the first part of the brisa is that even if I have just some of the window within 10 tefachim, it's going to be good. So already I could tell you now that if most of the window is within 10 tefachim, of course it's going to be good. And that was the second part of the brisa, which at that point in time is obvious. So zuvein tzarich lamar zukatani. So the Gemara says, yeah, but this is a style. And sometimes the Mishnayos and the Brisos write in a style where first they give you the big chiddush, and then just to highlight how big a chiddush it is, then they give you a chiddush that is significantly less of a chiddush. But then what is happening is that you just simply put the two chiddushim side by side and you realize that the first point is really a big chiddush. So this is the style of Zu, Vein Tzarich Lamar Zu. Amar Rav Yochanan Chalon Agul. So the Gemara over here now is going to take us through a little bit of a geometry lesson. Now, when discussing the geometry and the relationship between square and circles, so Baruch Hashem, the Gemara has done this already a number of times, and the points that are going to be made are going to be repeated points, which means that we get to chazer most of what we already know in terms of the relationships between square and circles. However, admittedly, Rav Yochanan is going to be offering a number over here that is going to be very hard to process, very hard to understand. And even at the end of the sugya, the one particular number that's offered by Rabbi Yochanan over here is going to be a very difficult number to explain. But in the meantime, however, basically we know that a window that is going to be viewed as a pesach, connecting two chatzeros, as long as that window is within a wall that separates the two chatzeros, and as long as it's 4x4 in area, and as long as some of it is within 10 tefachim of the ground, so that is the Pesach connecting the two. Now, we're describing, obviously, a square window because we're calling it 4x4. What if it were circular? What would have to be the circumference of the circular window in order for it to be good? Now, already, you could probably already do the math in your head and figure it out. So, and if you have done it already, so you're going to be slightly surprised, shocked at what Rav Yochanan is going to throw out there as a number. Let's see all the Gemara inside. We are in Ayin Vav Amud Aleph. We are three lines from the bottom. The Amud Amar of Yochanan. Chalon Agul Tzarech She'eh Bekefo Esrim V'Arba Tfachim. Ushnaim U'mashu Mehem B'Soch Yud. She'im Yir V'Enu Nimtza Mashu B'Soch Yud. So Rav Yochanan describes the window in one of two ways. First of all, he says circumference has to be 24 Tfachim. And then on top of that, he says, is that if you're looking at how much of the window has to be within 10 Tfachim, so it has to be where the bottom two tefachim has to be within ten tefachim, so that if we were to square the circle, so then a portion of the bottom portion of the square would be within ten tefachim of the ground. The Gemara over here is obviously aghast at the circumference as described by Rav Yochanan. Meaning, if our square is 4x4, and he says now if we were to turn that square into a circle, so it would have to be 24 as the circumference. The Gemara says, wow, how do we get to that number? Michte. Koshesh bekefa shosha tfachim, yeshbo berofo tefach, betracer sagya. So the Gemara says, look, we know the relationship between diameter and circumference. So the Gemara here describes it as 3:1. You go back to the Gemara here in Erevin, on Daf Yadalin, where we spent a good amount of time talking about this relationship. It is obviously an estimate. The more mathematically accurate description, relationship between circumference and diameter is going to be pi. But nevertheless, calling it 3:1 ratio, which the, as we discussed all the way back in Erevin, Daf Yudalit, that was the Yamsha Shlomo, which was operating with a 3:1 ratio. So over here, we know that 3:1 halachically is perfectly acceptable to estimate it at 3:1. So the Gemara says, fine, so if I have a diameter of 4, and the relationship between circumference and diameter is 3:1, so the Gemara says, okay, so that means it's 12, so it should be a circumference of 12. So betrays our sagi, so that's exactly what's bothering the Gemara. 12 should be sufficient. So the Gemara says, yeah, but hani mili be igula, the Gemara says, fine. If we were making it just a circle with a diameter of 4, so the Gemara says, I agree with you. So then it could be 12, but that's not what we're doing over here. Aval birivua binan tfei. Over here, remember, it's got to be a square. So mechti, kama meruba yoser ala eagle, revia. So the Gemara says, now how much more is a square over a circle? So it's going to be a quarter greater. Now, just to think about this, by the way, in other words, using our base number of 4, it makes perfect sense. Meaning, if I took 4 as a diameter and made a circle around that as a circumference, so then it would be 12. Instead, let's say we were to take that same line of 4 and make that into a square. So that would be 4, 4, 4, and 4, meaning 4 times 4. That would be 16. How much greater is 16 over that of 12? So it's a quarter greater. So that's exactly what the Gemara says. But okay, but the Gemara says, but that's 16. That's not 24, meaning Rav Yochanan called it 24. So the Gemara says, b'shifts or sagi, would be good enough if it had 16. Hanimila igula denafik migo revuah. The Gemara says, yeah, that is talking about a circle inscribed within a square. Aval revuah denafik migo igula, but what, let's say, I had a square, and the square was around the circle, so being a tree, I'm going to need more. So my tamim mishum morshut the karnasa, because of the protruding corners. So michti. So the Gemara says, okay. So let's describe it. So kol amta rivua amta betray chumshe balachsona. So the Gemara says, look, we've gone over this also numerous times, and that is the relationship of a triangle where the two sides are equal and its hypotenuse. So if the two sides of the triangle are equal and it's a hypotenuse, so the relationship between them is going to be what the Gemara describes as one for the each of the sides and 1 2/5 for the hypotenuse. Over here, if it's 4 for each of the sides, which it is, in other words, the window is 4x4, so the hypotenuse is going to be 5.6 approximately. But again, the approximation over here is pretty much right on the money. So the Gemara says, so we're talking now about a hypotenuse of 5.6. So now, if I have a hypotenuse of 5.6, so that hypotenuse now, remember, we're drawing a circle around it. So at that point in time, what are we looking at over here? So we're looking at a circle with a diameter of 5.6. So if I'm looking at a circle with a diameter of 5.6, so that basically gets me to 17. Okay, a little bit less than 17, the Gemara notes, b'shif sar nechi chum shesagya. So it's 17 minus a fifth, meaning it's 16 and 4/5. So the Gemara says, okay, 16 and 4/5. So even as we have now taken our square window of 4x4, looked at its hypotenuse, understood that the hypotenuse really is the diameter, and made a circle around that diameter, so then what we're getting is a number that is close to 17, but nowhere near the 24 that Rav Yochanan wants. Rav Yochanan says that the circumference is going to be 24. So, the Gemara now is going to say something which is admittedly difficult, but the Gemara is going to say, Rav Yochanan, Amar ki dayana de Kesari, v'amar la karabanan de Kesari. Rav Yochanan follows either the judges of Kesari or the rabbis of Kesari de Amre, igula migo rivua riva. That if I have a circle and a square, the relationship is a quarter. Actually, this is what we just got done describing earlier. and then Rivua, we go Igula, but if I have a square within a circle, so then Palga. The relationship between the square and the circle, meaning if I'm drawing a circle around a square, so then the relationship is going to be half, meaning that the amount necessary for the circle around the square is going to be let's do it this way. Square is going to be half of the circumference of the circle. Okay, and so that means to say that the circle is going to be 16. So we're going to have to add 50% to that. And so 50% of that, and so that'll get us to the number 24. So what the Gemara now says is that as long as you follow this formula in this ratio, so then you do understand how Rav Yochanan gets to 24. The problem is, with the Gemara over here, as we just got done describing, is that, look, we just went through the mathematics in terms of, and the geometry, in terms of what happens when you draw a circle around a square. So when you're drawing a circle around the square, so we just got done saying that when drawing a circle around the square, so you basically look at the hypotenuse. The hypotenuse now becomes the diameter. You then multiply that number by 3, and you get to, in our particular case, you get to 17, or close to 17. Not anything near the 24 that's being described by Rav Yochanan. So Rav Yochanan is following this formula provided by the Chachamim of Kesari, or the judges of Kesari, but the formula over here is very hard to understand from a mathematical standpoint. Good. So this obviously poses a difficulty. Tosus himself, right here on the top, understands that this is very difficult. In other words, even without the basic mathematical skills, in other words, if you were to just simply draw this out, you would realize that they seem to be often wrong on this. So, okay, much discussion to be had in terms of how to creatively understand what the Kesari Kesari judges were doing over there. Not for us right now in terms of the daf, but certainly a worthwhile endeavor to try to understand and justify. But as the Gemara itself pointed out, though, based on the simple math that we know, so really what the circumference comes out to is just a little bit under 17. Pachus midala adal v'chulei amar Rav Nachman loshanu ala chalon shebein beis chatzeras. Now, we talked here about the unification of two courtyards where there's a wall separating the two of them, but there's also a Pesach. And as long as it's 4x4, and as long as it's within 10 tefachim, or as long as part of the chalon is within 10 tefachim, so that now it gives an opportunity for unifying the two chatzeros. Ava chalon shebein beis batim. Now, but what if it is a window, a portal, between two houses, meaning it's a duplex, and I now have an opening, and the opening in the wall between these two duplexes is above 10 tefachim. Afilo malam yasar nami imrasal ariv ma'arvin echad. So here, when it comes to houses and portals and windows within a house, so you have an opportunity to unify, even if it's above 10 tefachim. My taima, basic command amayadame. So the Gemara employs an idea that we also discussed earlier in the Masechta, really in a totally different context, in terms of the malacha of hotza'ah, but nevertheless, the idea is as follows, is that when you're in a house, so it's an enclosed area, as an enclosed area, halacha allows us to look as if it's totally filled up. And so therefore, since it's totally filled up, so when I have a chalon between one room and another within the same house, meaning it's a duplex, and the shared wall now, you have some opening between them, regardless of how high it is, because it's within a house, it's viewed as something which is accessible. So Eisvei Rav LeRav Nachman Echad LiChalon. So Rav says to Rav Nachman, look, the Svara sounds great, but I have a Brisa, and the Brisa doesn't seem to support this. The Brisa writes, Echad LiChalon Shebein Beis Chatzeros, when I have a window between two courtyards, Echad LiChalon Shebein Beis Batim, or if I have a window between two houses, Echad LiChalon Shebein Beis Alios, or between two floors, Echad LiChalon Shebein Beis Gagin, or between two roofs, Echad LiChalon Shebein Beis Chadarim, or between two rooms, Kulan Dalad Adal Besocha Sarah. So it has to be that the window will only connect if it's dalad al dalad and it's within 10 tefachim. So over here, the Braisa seems to say that even when dealing with homes, you still have to be within 10 tefachim of the ground. So Tirgama Achatzeres, so he says, okay, but I'm going to teach you how to learn the Braisa. When the Braisa was talking about within 10 tefachim, it was only talking about the Chatzer. So the Gemara says, that's very difficult. Vaha Echad Li Ketani. That's not how the Braisa seems to present itself. The Braisa says, regardless of whether talking about this or this or this, the Braisa seems to string together all these different cases into one halacha. So Tirgama Adalid Adalid. So the Gemara says, okay, but I could still defend. I will tell you that as far as the halacha 4x4, this is the common denominator between all these cases. But vis-a-vis the height, it's different. For a chatzar, it has to be within 10 tefachim. For a house, it could be above 10 tefachim. That's how we can learn the braisa. Bamine Rav Abba May Rav Nachman. Final question on this discussion of windows opening from one to another. Lul ha-pasuch mein bayis le'aliyah. So let's say you have an opening to the attic, and the opening to the attic is right now in the ceiling, but in the middle of the house. So tzarech sulam kavul atiro, o ein tzarech sulam kavul atiro. Obviously, the only way you can get up into the attic door is only with a ladder. And the Gemara is wondering, in order to call that a Pesach, do you have to have a fixed ladder over there in order to call that a Pesach? Now, we said that as it relates to windows that are in the wall between the duplexes, so ki armina basic command amalia dami hanimila min atzad. Maybe the Gemara is suggesting that this is only going to be allowable if the opening is on the side of the wall, like the case of the duplex. Aval beemsa, but when the attic opening is in the middle of the house, of lo, maybe no. Maybe over there, we do not say basic command damalia dami. In other words, just practically speaking, how are you getting now into the attic space? If you had a fixed ladder over there, fine, I know the answer. But if I don't have a fixed ladder over there, how are you getting to the attic space? So, odilma loshna, or maybe Gemara says no. Maybe this principle of basic command damalia dami, assumes that anytime that you're within the house, so halachically the house is considered one closed, enclosed area, and so therefore, regardless of where the opening is, we view the opening as if it is accessible, if not practically accessible, but halachically accessible, and therefore it really shouldn't make a difference whether the opening is on the wall or the opening is on the in the middle of the ceiling. So Amalein Otsarech. So his answer is very simple. No need. It's not necessary. So Sovereign Mina Sulam Kavuhu Dein Otsarech Hasulam Arayt Sarech. So the Gemara says, okay, at least, but let's try to mitigate the chiddush just a little bit. Oh, so maybe I don't need a permanent ladder, but maybe I need some sort of temporary ladder, meaning there has to be some way to access it. So it Rav Yosef, Rav Yumi, Rav Nachman, Echad Sulam Kavu, Echad Sulam Arayt Ein Otsarech. So the Gemara says, no, it really doesn't matter. You don't have a permanent ladder, you don't have a temporary ladder, meaning the principle of basic command damalia dami really tells me that as long as it is potentially accessible to get from one room to another or to get from the first floor to the second floor through the attic opening, so that's going to be good enough in terms of connecting, so that when making an eruv, again, assuming that we're talking about the rooms that are owned by two different people, so when making an eruv unifying these two rooms, so as long as there's an opening within a house, regardless of where the opening is, so the possibility is that they can make one eruv for the two different rooms. Adkan, that's where we're going to finish, and tomorrow we open up with the Mishnah. Let us quickly recap and review. We finished this the sixth parak of Erevin, and within the end of the sixth parak of Erevin, so we discussed first cases of interior-exterior chatzer, where number one, we have more than one occupant per interior and exterior chatzer, and under what circumstances do we say that the drisus regal of the interior is going to create a problem for the exterior? Machlokus in the Gemara between Rav Yosef and Shmuel. What happens if I have a non-Jew living in the interior? Is that going to create a problem as well? The Gemara quickly discussed that. And finally, one of the last discussions we had is regarding the Beis Sha'ar. That if I have a house, and in front of the house I have a gatehouse, so the gatehouse is not considered primary residence, it does not need to contribute to the Eruv. And a discussion in terms of what exactly is the definition of a gatehouse. One that is in front of one that's in front of one house, multiple houses. Anyway, a discussion over there between Shmuel and Rav Yochanan. On as we move towards the end of the sixth parak, so a discussion in terms of whether or not we can have a structure where, from one perspective, it looks like a gatehouse, and from the other perspective, it looks like a primary residence. And would the halacha allow for that kind of ambiguity where it could be called both a gatehouse and a primary residence? Then the Gemara's conclusion is no. halacha will not allow us to look at a house with that kind of ambiguity. We're going to have to choose. Either it's a gatehouse or it's a regular house. The Gemara notes that by Erev Chatzeros, the Gemara notes that by Erev Tchum, there was an allowance of looking at the Bein HaShemashos period with ambiguity, but the Gemara says, yeah, but that's fundamentally different because Bein HaShemashos is a period of ambiguity. And so therefore the halacha allows us to look at it with more ambiguity. That ended the sixth parak. The seventh parak of Erevin, we started, and we started off with the basic premise that if I have two chatzeros that are next to one another, a wall separating the two chatzeros, nevertheless, as long as there is a pesach, or in the case of the Mishnah, a chalon allowing access from one side to the other, as long as the chalon is 4x4, and it's within 10 tefachim, or at least part of it is within 10 tefachim of the ground, so that would allow for a possibility, an opportunity, for the two chatzeros to make one joint Eruv. In the Gemara's discussion, number one, we discuss what the need is of the second half of the Mishnah. The first discussion we had is this position of the Mishnah have anything to do with Lavud? The answer was no. Second issue was, why is there, what the second half of the Mishnah seems to be superfluous. It just seems to be the inferences of the first half of the Mishnah. The Gemara went ahead and discussed this as well. And the style of the Mishnah in which it was written in. And then, for a good part of the opening of this parak, we discuss the statement of Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan says that if I took my square chalon, a 4x4 tefachim, and I were to draw a circle around it, the circle would be 24 tefachim. That is very difficult, and the Gemara mathematically noted how difficult that is. In fact, we drew a circle around that square, and we got to 16 and 4/5, obviously significantly less than the 24 that is demanded by Rav Yochanan. The Gemara noted that Rav Yochanan was following a formula that was given to him by the Dayanim of Caesarea, a formula that, quite frankly, is difficult to explain mathematically, but it was given to him by those Dayanim, and they said that when I'm drawing a circle around a square, so basically I take this square, I take 50% of it, I add it on, and that's where I get to the circumference of the circle above the square. Okay? And admittedly, as we pointed out, a difficult formula to assess and understand. The Gemara then went on to describe that the idea that the chalon has to be within 10 tefachim is only when we're talking about a chatzer, only when we're outside. But once we're inside and we're in an enclosed area, so then halacha says it doesn't matter where the chalon is in the shared wall between the two houses. The halacha will say that chalon will connect the two, and if they want to, they can make one joint eruv. And the Gemara also concluded on the Amud Beis, that's not only true when it comes to the vertical wall, but it's also true regarding the ceiling as well. Even if I have an attic space in the middle of the ceiling, and even if there's no ladder there, not a permanent ladder, not a temporary ladder, but because we're within an enclosed house, so therefore the halacha will view the first floor and the second floor as if they're connected. Ad kan.